There's many ways to move a workload to the cloud, and sometimes you don't want to move every instance of the workload. Perhaps you want to run your dev and QA in the cloud where you can burst for capacity as needed and shrink down when you don't. Meanwhile, staging and production are living the on-prem life in their climate-controlled cabana. How do you keep the environments consistent across clouds? Is this even a good idea? And what could possibly go wrong? Is something that no self-respecting IT person should ever, ever say. Welcome to Day 2 Cloud, a frank discussion of what happens when cloud stops being polite and starts getting real. This is episode 8, and I am your host, Ned Bellavance, Ned1313 on the Twitters. Joining me today on the podcast is Mike Nelson, a solutions architect for Rubrik, a Microsoft MVP, and a VMware V expert. Wow, that's a lot of good stuff. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Ned. I appreciate that.
Hey, fellow MVP, we got to represent, right?
That's right. That's right.
And VMware V expert, correct me if I'm wrong, that's sort of the equivalent of the MVP program, but for VMware?
It is. It's actually a little bit broader than that, and it's not as in-depth as the MVP program. And, you know, the MVP program is more community-focused, and as you know, and giving back to the community and things like that. The V Expert program is more around, you know, the social media aspect of it and kind of evangelizing the VMware, technology, if you will.
Sure. Makes sense. Well, I think that's probably going to play well into what we're going to be talking about today, because you wanted to talk about planning a hybrid design. So why don't you tell me a little bit about the situation and what was the business requirements and the use case for what you're trying to set up?
Sure. So in one of my previous lives as a consultant, what I did was I did work for a company that had multiple offices located throughout the United States. And one over in Europe, and they actually created a couple of software applications. They sold consulting, but they also created in-house or customized applications, if you will, for the financial industry. And they had developers that were located some overseas, some that were in the U.S. And what the internal technology folks had done, the IT folks had done, is actually gone out and created a testing platform, right? So a dev test area. And it was basically a place where all the developers, no matter where they were, would all come to the central on-premises data center, or the colo that they actually had. And they would, you know, all do their testing in a VM type environment. And it was very rudimentary, very basic. It actually caused a lot of headaches when you'd have multiple testers in there, and they would try and divvy out VMs, and it would create all kinds of problems with resource contention and image problems. And there was just a whole listing of issues that they needed to resolve. So they kind of got me involved in that. And we went through the iterations of trying to take this environment, understand what the needs were in terms of they needed a place to take their applications that they were creating, these customized finance applications, not only isolate them to specific groups of developers, but also be able to take those environments and move them with ease to different geographical locations, because a lot of their customers weren't all going to the same place to get the app, right? So they had no idea, you know, some customers were coming back and saying, oh, well, you know, the performance is really bad. We get, it takes forever to load this and do that and do this. And they just were, you know, taken aback by that, like, well, how can that be? It's great for us. Well, it's might be great for you, but it's not great for your customers. And that's really just part of the cloud, right? I mean, you know, that's why we have regions in the cloud, and that's why we have, availability zones and groups and things like that. So it really was an aspect of them really coming to understand what they needed in a dev test environment and how they could better utilize that environment to help out, you know, the creation of their software, the building of their software, the testing, the QA, and then the final delivery to the customer.
Okay. You mentioned a bunch of things that I might want to dive a little more into. So, I mean, sure. Obviously the first thing is that, did you have a capacity problem with that that on-premises environment where too many people wanted to do testing and not enough physical hardware to host them all?
Yeah, that actually was something that they didn't realize up front. They thought that, you know, hey, it's a VM environment. We can just spin them up and tear them down. And, you know, we know how that is, right? You get VM sprawl. You pretty much have all these orphans that are sitting out there, you know, machines that weren't deleted correctly. You got disks laying around. You got, you know, all kinds of problems that you have. And they just they had really no governance around it. You know, it was you know, a system administrator that was in charge of all this. And they were like, oh yeah, just go ahead and build whatever you want. And it kind of, you know, exploded from there. So that really was a problem. And it got worse as time went on, especially when they started to introduce different groups of developers that wouldn't get involved. And they were kind of hoarding their own space, if you will.
If you're not defending that space, somebody else is going to take it, unless you've got some sort of capacity limits or some sort of management or governance in place. So that could be really difficult to manage. Yeah. In terms of, so they were actually building their own environments from the VM up, or were they, you know, requesting capacity and VMs, and then there was an operations team implementing that?
Well, when I got on board on the project, they got to a point where the person that was managing it, the system administrator, couldn't handle all the requests that were coming in from the developers, and especially the requests that were coming in from overseas, because, you know, you had one person, it doesn't work 24 hours a day. And some of these developers were, you know, 1, 2, 3 a.m. in the morning, U.S. time, were coming in saying, hey, we need 3 VMs to do this, and we need it like in the next 10 minutes. So, you know, needless to say, that got kind of unruly. They would come in and they didn't understand the concept of hey, you have to go through this guy. He's the bottleneck. We don't want to do that anymore. So if you want to think about it, they actually went a little bit rogue, right? They kind of got their own permissions to go ahead and create these machines because, you know, that person was like, hey, I'm not going to get up at 2 a.m. when my pager goes off anymore to build you a VM. Here are the credentials to go out and create them. Go create your own stuff. And that was probably the beginning of the end right there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You gave the kids the keys to the castle and said, be responsible now and don't take more than you need. Yeah. Well, everybody needs that 8 CPU, 64 gig of RAM VM to run their test workload, right?
That's right. And this was to give them a little bit of credit, I mean, this was a smaller enterprise, right? It was more of a smaller, they weren't exactly a startup. They've been doing this for a while, but their IT was smaller. And, you know, I don't blame that individual because he wasn't really given any resources. I don't know if he asked for any, but, you know, it's all in a matter of how the management looked at it. And that too turned into a very active discussion point when we went through the planning of the changes.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. You know, as someone who also has worked in consulting, I can say that the internal IT for the consulting firm never gets the level of attention that the external projects do. It's what do they call that? The cobbler's children never have good shoes. Yeah, it's sort of that situation, right? Oh dear, what do you do? Now you mentioned another thing that jumped out at me, which was the idea of portability of environments. So when you say portability, do you mean actually taking the environment as it is now, including all of the data, and moving that to a different location? Or is it more just spinning up another instance of that environment in a different location?
Right. It was more of spinning up that instance, like you said, in a different environment, but it had to be and identical environment to what was there, right? So having the controls in place to actually take those exact images and move them to another environment was something that they had no concept of. They didn't understand because they would try and do clones, right? They would sit out there and they'd do clones, and they would try and create templates, and they were like, oh, we can create the templates, but then they get into licensing problems, you know, with the clones and things like that. Yeah. So they even actually tried at one point, it got to it where they would take that environment, some of their environments, especially the ones overseas, and they would try and bring them across the wire, the images all the way across the wire, overseas, into where the developers, what the country the developers were in, and they would try and run it like on VMware workstation on their laptops or their desktops, and it just blew up on them. So,
yeah, there's definitely more elegant solutions for solving that problem.
Well, it's not only that. Yeah, and I'm sorry. It's not only that, but it's also the fact that they're taking that code and moving it to another location where it's maybe not so secure. We're talking about a financial application,
right?
There aren't the same governance and controls and compliance and audit and everything else around where those data disks go and where that data goes. So that was another issue that came to the forefront.
Right. And you mentioned licensing with cloning, and I think I've run into this before where you're trying to rearm the Windows licensing, and I think it's limited to 5 rearms before it says, no way, Charlie. So you sometimes have to get a little creative about how you do your templates and in images to avoid that.
Yep. You can get a little creative. They tried to get creative. They even used some licenses that weren't necessarily above the board, if you will. And so that got called out on the when we did the discovery. So
right, yeah, you gotta, if Microsoft comes knocking, you got to be able to respond to their licensing. You don't want to get into that conversation. That's not a fun one. I mean, it's not Oracle, but still.
That's right. It's exactly.
And then, you know, like you said, from a compliance perspective, I assume the VMware environment or the local on-prem environment, that had proper security controls and access controls and all that in place. But like you said, when you're moving it to a environment that's no longer in that on-prem, you have to be worried about how that environment is being governed and whether it meets your compliance needs.
Very much so. And when you think about it, I mean, when I went into the discovery phase and I came out with this, you know, the document that we provide to the stakeholders, the CISO of that company was just, he basically, his jaw dropped while he was reading the security part of it. He had no idea that this was going on. And he just said, well, this stops now.
Right.
It's not going to happen anymore. So there was, that's where you start getting into the stealth IT and what was actually happening under the covers. And when we started talking about the cloud, too, I was kind of like, well, you know, your responsibility just doesn't stop here, because when we start moving you into the cloud, this dev test scenario into the cloud, and you start doing even a hybrid scenario, which is, you know, actually what they finally wanted to end up with, I said, you know, security is still paramount here. I mean, you're putting your data into the cloud. So if you were concerned about it going overseas and sitting on somebody's laptop or desktop that could get stolen or something like that, you have to understand, you know, whether or not your compliance and audit and everybody else that's involved here is okay with that stuff going up into the cloud as well.
Yeah, no, yeah, everybody's got to be on board that bus.
Yes,
before it leaves the station. So let's move into, you know, the second half of this, which is the reality, what actually got set up and how it operated. So you did this whole requirements gathering and figuring out how things actually were running versus how maybe they seemed to be running at first. What did you actually end up putting in place to solve the requirements?
Well, what we did was we actually put in place a more of a self-service type of lab environment on premises. They didn't. It came down to some of the requirements and goals of the dev tests and QA. They added, by the way, they added QA at the end. They actually were doing QA separately, which I won't get into because that was just a mess. But they actually wanted that on premises. They had to have that for various reasons.
Okay.
So we implemented a self-service type lab environment. Okay. That was obviously based off of VMware. It would run. The administrator had full control over it, but it divvied out, you know, machines and things like that. It was all put in place, and everybody was on board with it. But they also wanted to put some in the cloud because their customers, what they were getting to was eventually they wanted to be able to have people outside of the company test. and be able to do run QA. So they wanted their, if you want to call them like friendly customers, they actually wanted to say, hey, we've got this GA code we want you to test, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't want their customers coming in and touching that on-premises environment. So they wanted a hybrid solution where they could actually mobile, you know, take that code and make it mobile and put it up into the cloud. And then they could open up that cloud environment for their customers and their other, you know, hire developers and whoever to go in and actually run the test in QA and things like that. So they came up with the solution of this hybrid cloud, and it really worked out well. I mean, when we first implemented it, there was, of course, you know, a good month or two of, hey, we need to fix this, we need to change that, we need to do this. This isn't working out so well. But the people really adapted to it. And I give kudos to the developers. When I go into a situation like this, developers are the ones who are actually going, hey, you know, I don't care what you do, just let me test my apps. I don't care what the infrastructure is. And if you stop me from testing, then, you know, this app is going to break and things are going to go bad. We're going to lose money in this whole bit. Right. But the developers were actually the ones that came back and said, hey, this is awesome. Because we can allocate our own stuff, we can destroy it. It's time based. We utilized up in Azure, we used a dev test lab. So we utilized dev test labs in Azure on the cloud side. And as you know, with the dev test labs, I mean, that has complete control where you can, you know, create claimable machines and have formulas and artifacts and all this other kind of stuff that you can put in. And they loved it. So it turned out in the end that the on-premises was pretty much just to, you know, do the finalization of the code. But the developers moved all of their testing and everything up in the cloud. And they were like, hey, we're going to do all this in the cloud. But the requirements still, as they were, you know, a year ago when I did this, was that we still needed to do that on-prem. Now, that being said, as part of the vision going forward, I said, hey, in, you know, 2 years, 3 years, you're going to get rid of this on-premises environment. It's going to be gone. Everything should go up into the cloud. And they were all on board with it. And, you know, like I said, the developers are already up there. We just have to get the other folks, you know, to move up there as well.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, especially the ability to just allocate resources when they're doing a test and then deallocate those resources when they're done. And so that's happening in a somewhat automated fashion now, where they say, I need this for a couple of days, and then something gets rid of it.
Right. So natively in dev test labs, you can do that, right? But their development is all based off of, they've gone to Visual Studio Teams. And with Visual Studio Teams, that's all integrated. So they can just request through their projects in Visual Studio, they can just request, hey, I need a VM spun up to test this with this disk image or, you know, with this baseline, and go ahead and it talks directly to it. So that's how, you know, the DevOps folks have actually, you know, well, I should say the dev folks have moved to a DevOps type scenario by embracing, you know, the Visual Studio integration aspect and also the GitHub, because everything is tied back to the source repository, which is in Git. So,
okay. And one of the things that we talked about in the as it was phase was issues with images and creating templates. So how was that problem solved both on-prem and in Azure?
So they're only giving, especially in Azure, they're only giving access to certain images that are created and validated by the a separate person, not that system administrator that managed before, but there's another person now involved that they just do imaging for not only the company's desktops and workstations. She is also responsible for validating the images that are available to the developers that are up in the cloud and on the on-premises dev test lab. So when she creates an image or she validates an image and it goes up there, she can say, you're allowed to use this image, but you're not allowed to modify the golden image if you were, or you're allowed to deploy this image for this amount of time. Okay, so you have 30 days to use this image. After that, it expires, you can no longer use it. Or, you know, those are all the capabilities that are up in Dev Test Labs. It's awesome. It really is. And they don't have that that great of flexibility on the on-premises side. So I still talk to her because she, you know, she asked me questions about quite frequently. But she comes back and she says, you know, I just wish we'd get rid of this environment because it's so much easier to manage up in Azure.
Oh, yeah. And that's, to me, that's a little surprising that, you know, I like VMware's products. I'm not going to, you know, talk bad about VMware. But one of the things that did surprise me is they tried to kind of do something with, I guess it was Cloud Director or whatnot, but it always seemed really, really complicated and difficult to set up. And a lot of admins were just looking for the easy button. And they saw that easy button up in one of the public clouds and went, okay, well, I guess I'm going there because I don't see an easy button here. Do you think VMware is ever going to get to the point where they do have that easy button?
Well, they used to have, I don't know if you knew this, but VMware many years ago used to have a product called Lab Manager. And Lab Manager was a much easier product, like you said. It was more of an easy button. It really was. But they scuttled that in favor of vCloud Director. And they opened up vCloud Director. But now they only offer vCloud Director to providers, to CSPs and you know, service providers, which is really not a great thing. And so that, and I'll tell you, the finance folks that are actually they're the folks that I'm working with on this project, that's what they're using. They're using vCloud Director on premises to do their lab stuff. And they had to sign up to a VMware TAP program and do all this other stuff just to get through the, you know, legal mumbo jumbo of using vCloud Director. But it is so much more difficult to use than, you know, they could make it a lot simpler, but it's not, like VMware says, it's not made for, you know, the enterprise. It's supposed to be made for providers, which I can understand, but they really haven't come up with a successor to Lab Manager, which was, you know, if they had that today, it's really kind of a cool product.
Right. That's not to say that Microsoft has a great answer for that either.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to use SCVMM with, what was it, Operations Manager, and what was the automation one? Service Manager. Trying to stitch all that stuff together was not exactly easy either.
No, it wasn't. And I just didn't ever understand why nobody took the stance of saying, hey, these people have to create lab environments. And it might be just because it was a, you know, they were like, well, they can just use our native, you know, SCVMM tools or our native vCenter tools and they can do the same. Well, no, it's not the same thing. So I never understood why they didn't do that. Now, cloud providers, I mean, there are a dime a dozen that create lab environments for you, right? There's, you know, there's Altison, there's Revelo, there's, you know, there's all kinds of vendors out there now that will create lab environments for you.
Yeah, I guess maybe they feel that that you know, ship has sailed and now they just need to focus on some other core aspect of their business and let the cloud, various cloud providers duke it out for lab environments. But I feel like maybe they're missing out a little bit, especially with the hybrid cloud thing.
I agree.
So another thing that we talked about a little bit was security. So in terms of applying security for your hybrid environment, how is that now being enforced so the CISO is happy?
Well, what it is that they've created they needed to take a step back and identify that, like I said before, your on-premises environment isn't the same for cloud from a security aspect. And the CISO actually said, you know, I need a person. He had one of his security analysts outline that, you know, this is what we need to do for the on-premises environment, but this is what we need to do for the cloud environment. So they actually, you know, have a plan in place, and they have an audit and compliance and regulation, plans and remediation and regulatory in place to do that and to understand the differences and nuances between the two. Now, that doesn't mean that they, you know, necessarily, you know, can say that, well, if it happens here, it happens there. But they're learning all the time. I mean, I just had a meeting with them. Well, it was a few months ago, but he was like, hey, we didn't know this. We didn't know that in Azure, we can, you know, set up this alerting in this. And he's like, you got something called like security something or other. And I'm like, oh yeah, security center, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, well, we didn't know we could do this. You know, can you tell us how we can set up these alerting and stuff when we get folks that try and do some bad things to our lab environments and possibly, you know, try and access, you know, the VMs that are out there, because we have developers that are going out and opening RDP ports, you know, and opening SSH ports and everything else. And that's when I introduced him to the, you know, the GIT, the just-in-time access for those VMs. Yeah. And he was like, oh, wow. That's incredible. That is just incredible. That's what we need. So it really is an evolution of understanding, especially from the security folks, on how all this can come together between the two.
Yeah, and for listeners who don't know what just-in-time VM access is, do you want to explain that a little bit? Because I think it's a super cool feature,
sure,
too.
It really is, because what you do is you can set up individual VMs or groups of VMs or all the VMs in your subscriptions for just-in-time access. And what that does is you can go into Security Center and you can say, hey, I want this particular IP address or this range of IP addresses to have access to this VM or these VMs on this port or a collection of ports for this amount of time. You notice I'm saying, there's a lot of variables in there. You can set all those variables. And I think the maximum now is 3 hours, but they're going to expand that. They allow, access up to 3 hours. But it really is a lifesaver, because I've kept ports open on my own VMs that I have up on Azure. And the next thing I know, I've got denial of service attacks coming in, it's just crazy.
I was doing a demo for Security Center, so I just left VM running with RDP available. The admin password was 68 characters longer than that. So it wasn't something that anybody was going to get, but I just left it hanging out there to see what Security Center would see. And within the course of 2 weeks, it saw over 50,000 attempts crack into that VM. And I was like, this VM is not, it's a public IP, but it's not actually listed on DNS or anything. And 50,000 attacks. If I had a weak password, it would have been cracked nothing.
Oh, easily. And I'll tell you, I did another webinar where I actually showed, and I've learned from my mistakes, trust me, is I actually showed a demo environment that was up in Azure. And when you show the machine names, what happens is that the hackers out there that release the botnets and do things, all of Azure's, and this is true with any cloud provider, AWS is the same, and Google Cloud is a little bit more difficult, but you can get them. All of those are public knowledge, all their IP ranges, all their public-facing IP ranges. So they basically just, send their botnet across all these IP ranges looking for open ports.
Right.
And it's sure enough, what I found is I can accelerate that to them actually coming after my machines just by giving a webinar and having it recorded, and then people go out there and watch the webinar and they're like, ooh, I want to look for these DNS names because it shows the machine name at microsoftonline.com, or ooh, he let the IP ad, look at that, I see the public IP address, I'm gonna go go after that one. So I actually did a webinar, and then sure enough, 2 or 3 days later, I start getting all these alerts from Security Center that those machines are, and I just created the machines during that webinar. It wasn't like I had them sitting around for a while.
Oh, yeah. So I mean that really hammers home that security's a priority when you're deploying anything in the public cloud, and you really have to be mindful of what gets a public IP and how it's locked down. It's amazing how quickly people will start trying to hack into your stuff.
And you have to be aware, too, is that, when you have folks that are trying to access, like these developers that were trying to come in and do their remote access, they were, they created separate VMs for jump boxes, right? So they would create these jump boxes, which, of course, had only one login and one password that was shared amongst all the developers. And they would go into that box, and then they would, RDP into their other boxes. And they were like, well, hey, all these other VMs don't have outside access, so this one jump box would get attacked crazy. I mean, it would just, that also comes down to also, one thing I wanted to get into was the sticker shock of doing this, right? It really does. It comes into where they were coming back saying, hey, this whole moving this up into the cloud thing, this dev test labs, this is getting really expensive. And I'm like, okay, well, let's take a look at what you're actually spending your money on, first of all, but then let's take a look at how much this would cost you if you were doing this on premises and have to scale up your hardware environment and, scale up the resources that you have on premises. Well, of course, you know, the two kind of evened out. I mean, the initial sticker shock was big because they had a lot of ingress into or egress out of Azure. And I say ingress because the way you look at it, if it's ingress or egress, that's a cost right there. But it leveled out. It really did. And it was more or less like, we need to understand, though, that from a budgeting perspective, when the CFO first saw that, he was like totally freaked out. And he's like, I'm not going to pay this, you know, every month just for this to happen and do that. But it went down. It normalized once they got more controls in place and they were a little bit more relaxed with uploading and downloading images and having those the data pipe. And the consumption up in Azure controlled, then that, you know, that price went down. And I brought that up because some of the jump boxes they were creating were huge. I mean, they were going out and creating these big boxes because they were like, hey, we got 20 developers that have to be on this jump box at a time. And they kept on coming back saying, well, we need this bigger. We need more RAM. We need more CPU. Right. We need more. And that's, you know, some of their consumption was just going through the roof with that.
So how did you solve that particular problem with the jump box? Did you find a different way to provide them remote access?
Well, that's exactly what when we got it to just in time. Because if you know, like this happened about a year ago, just in time just came out, you know, from, you know, private preview and public preview in the last, what, six months?
Yeah, it's really recent. Yeah.
Right. So just in time wasn't available then. And when it actually became available, that's when I contacted them and said, hey, we got this new thing. You guys really got to look at this. And that eliminated all of their jump boxes.
Okay. And that's, huge cost savings just from that, I imagine.
Huge.
Yeah. Because you got to keep those boxes running all the time, too. So yep, it's not like exactly. You can cut them down.
Exactly.
Cool. Another thing that I think you put in your notes that you wanted to talk about was determining that not one size fits everyone. So what was the thought behind that?
Sure. So what I was getting to in that is that some folks have this grand idea that is like we start out with the on-premises environment. I can go out and have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, VMware or Hyper-V hosts in a cluster. And that is going to be satisfy my needs for the next couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't need to do any capacity planning. I don't need to figure out that I may have to scale this thing up, right? But it came down to where I said, you know, I understand that from an on-premises because you're limited on resources, both personnel resources, you know, money resources, you name it. But when you get into the cloud, you're more elastic. You have the ability to expand and contract on demand, and you're only going to pay for the resources that you use. You're not going to sit there and pay for resources that are sitting there idle, right? If you have, some hosts that are only hosting one VM. You know, you've got a big, massive compute cluster that's got maybe 10 VMs on it. It's you're sucking yourself dry of expense there and operational costs. Where they moved up into dev test labs and they were like, hey, we need to grow this because we got a big release coming out. So we have to have 100 environments created for QA. Mm-hmm. But once that release is done, they shrink that down. And it's basically elastic. And then that bill, that final bill that comes through in the mail goes down considerably. So you have to look at this as one size does not fit all. It's not for every situation that, you know, this is going to be the golden goose of, you know, doing your dev tests and your QA.
Right.
But at the same time, this allowed for other teams to latch on. Because outside of the development, IT came and the person I was talking about that took care of the images, she was like, hey, can we take some of the stuff that we test in IT and we create VMs for testing operational applications and backup and recovery and all this other stuff? Can we throw that up into dev test labs and try that? And I'm like, why not?
Right.
So when it came down to it, she was like, yeah, we can move all this stuff up there and we can test it and we can take it away without affecting, you know, our on-premises resources. We don't have to touch that development area. We don't have to, you know, maybe cause if we have something that crashes, it doesn't crash everybody else.
Right.
You know, so that was definitely a plus, and it allowed other teams to be incorporated into this. And it, you know, it really, really helped the bottom line overall.
Wow. Okay. So you started with just the, what was the development for the external folks, but then your internal, you know, folks jumped on board as well. That's, I haven't heard that before, but that's, it totally makes sense when you say it out loud. It's like, oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it does. It does, because you have other teams that not only from IT, but there may be other teams that want to test something before they actually, you know, use it. So, you know, you could have an, yeah, just think of it, you know, if you have a, you know, an HR department that has something that they're like, hey, we want to give this a run through, we want to do a POC. Well, you want to do a POC, well, instead of putting it on premises, why don't we throw it up in the cloud and try it out there?
Right.
So.
Makes perfect sense. All right. Yep. So we're coming up on time. If you had to distill it things down to maybe two or three key takeaways, what do you think that those would be for the listeners?
The key takeaways that I would say is, number one, if you go into a situation like this, or you're in a situation like this, step back and evaluate exactly what you're using that lab environment for and what your goals are, because you may have a different idea of what that is as compared to what the people that are actually using the environment. Okay. If you're not the user, and it may be different than what the stakeholders or the management thinks that that environment is actually supposed to be used for or can be used for. So take a step back take all that in. And I hate to say, you know, write it all down or whiteboard it, but really that is the best way to do it, is to understand, trying to connect all the dots, right? And figure out where do we want to be? Where do we want to go? Mm-hmm. And it, you know, they came back, and that's why they brought me in, because they were like, hey, where do we want to go with this? But another takeaway is, understand that when you move into the cloud, it doesn't change, you know, drastically any of the processes or procedures or security, or even governance or regulation, anything like that, that you already have running on premises. There may be some minor tweaks, and depending on, you know, how this is done up here rather than down here, there's some changes in, hey, data governance says that you can do this, you know, as long as you have this data on premises or in a vault or whatever, but you can't put it up in the cloud. So there might be some things, but in general, it kind of, in a hybrid environment, it's just an extension of what you have on premises. So there isn't a lot of, and in my experience, a lot of change that had to happen there in internal documentation or processes or procedures.
Okay.
The last thing I would say is that, you know, embrace the cloud. I mean, go out and give it a shot. I understand some folks will say, hey, you've got sticker shock. There are things that, you know, you're going to be paying for. But you need to realize that. You need to understand that that's, you know, something that you have to deal with, because you are moving into an elastic computing environment. You're only going to end up paying for what you use. You know, you're not going to be paying a lot of other overhead. So, you know, go out, give it a shot, play around with it, and I think you'll like it.
Cool. Those are great points. Thank you for bringing those up. And thank you so much for being a guest. If people want to know more about you, where can they find you? Where can they follow you?
The best place is on Twitter. I follow that quite often. You know, it's at Nell Media, NELMEDIA. And or they can email me at mike@geektweakers.com.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for being on the show, Mike. It was a really good time.
Thank you, Ned. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Mike for appearing on Day 2 Cloud. And thanks to you, dear listener, for tuning in. If you like the show, please subscribe and let me know on Twitter. If you have suggestions for future shows, I'd love to hear them. Until then, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.